welcome to episode 100.
Let's just go with that.
Musing and amusing.
Yeah. That's what I want.
Is this too much? Is this too much?
We're doing it live.
This is Chad, and I play Trollblood.
This is Keith, and I play Crix.
This is Josh. I play Mercs.
And this is Danny. I play Retribution.
And this is Crump, and I play Circle.
Awesome. Welcome. Welcome again. I mean, welcome to episode 100. No other ones like it. Episode 100.
Our very special episode 100.
Our very special episode 100. Here for you, the viewers. We are podcasting from location.
Viewers or listeners?
From location.
Well, they're both.
They can do both.
They can watch the dial go across the screen.
True.
It goes from 1 to 55.
Watch a knob move positions for an hour straight.
That's right.
I mean,
I often watch knobs move positions.
It's not as formulaic as some shows out there.
True. Well, this is the live episode, so everything is unscripted.
The bar is still going to go from the left to the right.
Right.
So it will always... we stick to the basic formula of the program.
There is,
but it's not like a CSI or
we're
something
interactive.
Where you just like you know what's going to happen.
The viewer can click on the bar and slide it both ways.
That's true. That's true.
Like a... Never mind.
Well, it used to be real time.
Oh, and it was from something else.
This
is going to... This is never going to get old.
It's never going to get old.
So we wanted to welcome Mr. Modesto to
my husband.
Yes. Welcome. We spent a lovely few days together.
We have.
It was quite amazing. We had our reunion today.
Feels so good to
spent
be reunited.
So much time last night and this morning together. It
absolutely.
Was quite lovely.
Absolutely.
I would say. Get to share with all of our loved ones as well, including Colin.
Colin,
who's
yes.
Not here at the moment.
Are we sitting down for Thanksgiving dinner? Like, what the fuck?
I just wanted to introduce the amount of love and attention that I have for the man that I wish to spend the rest of my life with.
Exactly.
I don't understand how you could not take this moment as seriously as possible.
Exactly. This is serious. This is serious business.
It's because we're in Missouri. Is gay marriage legal in Missouri yet?
Probably not.
All right.
We're already
that's
married.
Why.
Wait, why would I go backwards to unmarried?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'd have to divorce him to remarry him.
Wait,
really
Facebook
weird,
is like official now?
Yeah.
Like you just like
that's
click
Facebook
and you're
official.
Like,
there's even a
half
for
my
it.
Stuff belongs to this other individual.
As I understand it, they have justices of the piece on
of the books.
On of the books, whatever.
Justices of the Facebook piece.
Justices of the on payroll, and they just monitor these status changes.
Absolutely.
And any of them that don't have, you know, licenses on file, they can draft them.
Draft them right
through Facebook. It's a new service.
You know, it's gonna be really sad in like 15 years when that's a thing.
15.
I'm calling it.
Yeah, like
I'm calling it now. No, that's too
maybe like
that's too months. Progressive.
Yeah. Well, so, it'll be two for straight.
Yeah, and then
longer.
Like 50. For, yeah.
So let's explain the series of events that brought us to having our good friend Danny Modesto on our podcast this evening. Our very special episode 100.
Episode 100.
One of its kind.
Incredibly special.
This particular episode is the beginning of a series of tryouts to replace one of our podcasts.
Exactly. Mm.
Yes, as you may or may not have known by now, John has suffered a stroke and will not be joining us ever again.
It's going to be tragic if he suffers a stroke.
And has revoked all of his possessions and moved to Nepal.
Right.
And there was something else that he did.
He's become a Buddhist monk.
He's done several things.
He's actually shaved his head to go become a Buddhist monk.
Yeah, well, Pick's incoming.
Yep.
That's legit, indeed. That's legit.
I don't want to get sad here, guys, but I do kind of miss him.
Yeah.
You didn't know him as well as we did.
Yeah.
True. It is true.
You don't know
I'm the
pain.
Nice one, though.
You don't know the pain.
he would have been sure to let
us know. That poll fell off the front page.
Yeah,
you're probably safe.
You're very
just
safe.
Locked in.
You were easily triple his score anyway. So.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so cycling back. Uh-huh. You're at Recruits over the past weekend down in Kansas City, Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Here in Kansas City.
We are podcasting.
We're podcasting live. This is happening.
Not at Recruits.
As you listen
not
to
like
it.
Hours after. We
as you listen to it, this is happening.
Yes.
Not sure how that's how that works.
Think about the logistics.
We'll go with it anyway.
Don't think about the logistics of it. Just
that's true except for Lance, maybe.
Anyway.
This is your life, Lance. And it's passing 1 minute at a time.
You guys will be hearing this on a Friday, I think. But like right now, it's Sunday, the Sunday after Recruits. We just had a weekend long of gaming and whatnot for how many of us played in the Invitational qualifier?
All of us. The five of us podcasting along with Colin. About six other individuals from our meta area.
Yeah, so we...
And some Texans.
We might get into some very special episode 100 battle reports. Not sure yet.
I'm kind of going to see how things go. We promise we won't let Crump do a battle report, though.
But we had the...
Well, we could do Modesto and Eyes.
We had the company of our good friend Danny Modesto, and we thought, hey, why not, you know, why not get him on for our very special episode 100?
Make the most of it for all of you out there. It could be something a little special for this, our celebration of 100 podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Finally got to 100. It feels so good. Feels so good.
It almost, milestone. Yeah, it almost feels like... Like we'll never get past it. This is the height. This is the height. It's just it's going to be episode 100.
Yeah,
is going to be
Yeah,
this is the climax of our podcasting career. Or,
dude,
what?
Climax. Is not a word you can say on
a podcast. On a podcast. Yeah. Oh, right.
Kind of awkward.
At least it's not as bad as that.
It burns.
It does burn.
Dude.
That's called chlamydia.
Dude. Oh, dude.
Oh, dude.
You might as well just tell that story.
I don't know what story you're talking about. I have no idea.
We'll save that story for an After Dark.
All right. So
we always save stories for After Dark.
So our next After Dark is going to be amazing.
And a lot of stories saved up.
Look for it.
we played in the main event. There were a couple side events. Six rounds for the War Machine Weekend qualifier here. Ended up being 62 players?
52. I mean, technically 53. But it was basically a 52-person tournament.
All right, there was a bye, and then there was drops.
No, it was a 53-person tournament. There were 53 people signed up, however one individual...
No, there were 52 people.
There were 52 people signed up, however one of the individuals...
Just filled out a sheet and handed it in. He hadn't signed up for the convention. He hadn't signed up for the tournament. He just handed in a sheet. So they thought there were 52 people in the tournament. So they just, but there were actually 53, and so my army list got left off to the side. So when they put up like the pairings, they were like, "Yeah, we've got 52 army lists," and my name wasn't on either of the flights. And I was just like, so I went up and talked to her, and she was like, "I don't understand. We have 52 and 52." She's like, "Are you sure you registered?" I was like, "Kim, I stood right in front of you 5 minutes ago and wrote my name on the paper. Yes." And so I ended up getting a bye because the gentleman had failed to sign up or register, and it was actually 53. So I got a bye, round one, 52-person tournament.
Fastest battle report
So you
ever.
Weren't really...
Hush it.
Two and two.
Hush it.
It was a good tournament. Six rounds. They split it into two flights. It went very smoothly, I thought. Good organization. Judges. We had Danny Goodner was doing some judging, and Scott Whitebread was around doing some judging. Kim did the organization. Mm-hmm.
I would like to point out that Dan Raines was not there.
Dan Raines, I saw him a couple times.
He popped his head
in
every...
In and out.
Yeah, I saw him at the very end. He said he had to work all weekend long, which sucks.
Yep. I was talking to Scott about that. He's like, he had to work, but he makes the schedules. Like, he is the scheduler. Don't know how that happens.
It does happen.
Yeah.
The scheduler where I work, she asked me to pick up her shift one week, and she's like, "I'm going out of town for a concert, and I couldn't get the day off."
I'm like, what? Just give yourself the day off? Is that how that works, actually?
Yeah, I'll pick it up, I guess. You could have just scheduled me for it. You know? I'm like, sure, yeah, okay.
It's like, odd. I have to work today? How did this happen?
I specifically requested this off.
God. I am going to write a really angry letter.
It will be tersely worded.
Who do I send this to? Oh.
Myself. Gotcha.
Oh, F me.
It's just like split personality disorder. Dr. Jekyll writes the schedule, and Mr. Hyde actually does the work. Mm-hmm.
So they ran a really tight shift. tight ship at recruits.
Tight ship.
Of multiple shifts.
See? Yes.
Chow just thinking in advance.
Whatever.
Multiple shifts of a tight ship.
Yeah.
No, they did a good job, though.
I was all stoked to go in there and crush some dreams, and then promptly lost in the first round.
Ha ha. Into a total noob. Too.
I don't know how they
playing a terrible catch.
I ended up losing to the guy who won it all, so I felt less bad about that. That being paired against the Colin from Texas, who managed to take it down. He was playing circle.
Whose forum handle is Bobbliness?
Yes, everybody but you knew that.
You are literally the only
person
in the
world. Podcast listening, who are watching this podcast, may not hear.
No, they know.
Most
okay,
most of them
fine,
probably
know. Whatever.
But Colin was playing a little bit of a different take on Epic Morvana. And we actually played Morvana versus Asphyxius, which was a matchup that I had originally considered to be extremely favorable for Asphyxius. And things went, in some ways, a lot how I predicted that they would. A lot of things went a lot the way that I had hoped it would. And just towards the end, the problem with one of the things to watch for with Morvana is you always have to be cautious with your caster, because with Scales of Fate, she can take some of the most innocuous attacks and bring you low and bring you low with them.
Matty K recorded that game as well, so people will be able to watch that.
Yep, that'll be up on endgamegaming.net at some point. So I hope. Some of the games he chooses to put up and some he doesn't.
Right.
Well, some of them get screwed up, too. Like, he technically recorded our game, the game that I played versus Josh in round two. Mm. And then Josh, I think to save his own face, decided to turn the recording off.
That's correct.
Before the game started.
Oh, I was supposed to turn the camera off after the game, and I did not do that.
He told us that he wanted us to turn the camera and the sound on, and then I didn't pay any attention to what he was doing, and he walked away. And then so I went over and I pushed the buttons that he told me to, but I'm pretty sure I just turned them straight off. I'm pretty sure he turned them on and then I turned them off.
He was like, beep.
I think he told us to turn them off
afterwards.
To make sure to turn them off afterwards, and we both thought that meant to turn them on before.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
English.
And so we were like,
it's good.
About to start, and I was like, wait, shouldn't we do something with these cameras? And he was like, oh, yeah. Push this button.
Turn it off.
Because I thought he said to turn it on after we were done with our deployment. So that.
Right.
Yeah. So, So our game, probably not being brought to you, which is fine. Because it was mostly three rounds of, like,
bricking up in a zone.
Bricking up in awkward positioning, followed by Gorton being eaten by Mulk.
Wait, was this the game where Kel Balok was the worst?
No. That was
a
league game.
Okay.
That
was not recorded, but we could talk about it if you want.
I mean,
I don't want to hear this again.
If it ever happens, he's getting fired. he was on a tight leash throughout the tournament. He had to make at least 2 points per game.
You're talking about Kel Balok?
Yeah. He had to make at least 2 points per game, or Gorton was going to gut him.
I like to think that just before that, yeah, Britain money. I like to think that before our league game, Madrak and him kind of met in the forest, like before the battlefield, and Madrak just kind of shipped him like a bag of gold and was like, "Hey, if you could just make it look like you have a coughing fit, like in the middle of this upcoming battle, I'd really appreciate it."
And like I said, that's why the burrower that charged him didn't kill him.
Right.
That's why
exactly.
He's like one of the few pieces that survived that game.
The burrower goes to attack him, and Madrek's like doing the like cutoff motion, like, "Noof! Uh-oh, uh-oh. Oh, missed him. Oh.
Sorry.
You'll get to shoot some more."
So, yeah, Danny, how was your weekend?
It was good, actually. Good, I flew in on Friday night, and we all got to hang out for a while and got ready on, like, 3 hours of sleep for the qualifiers, which is always fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My first round was against, I believe, a local player, Brad. Sorry. I was playing my Ossian list for the PC, and he was playing Epic Haley. The game was a comedy of errors. So I ended up knocking over Haley, sitting on one focus. Ossian feats, slightly out of range. I'm like, okay. She's knocked down. We got this.
Wait. You didn't pre-measure.
Ossian was off to the side from all the other models. So she was in the feet range.
Gotcha.
All the other models move up. Every single gun that tried to shoot her was out of range.
Except
by like
for
a quarter or a half an inch.
Except for two. I got to watch this game because I was on my buy.
You were on your round one buy.
And he did actually get two Mage Hunter Strike Force in range to shoot her, but they were out of command. So could not actually shoot.
It was a brilliant maneuver.
Oh my god.
It was incredible. It was actually one of the most incredible assassination runs I've ever seen.
It's like Ossian pops his feet and then he's like, oh, this is
like
awkward.
An average is like an 80-85%. 0%.
Absolutely. Literally,
apparently,
no
if you can't
chance.
Hit, you can't kill.
Yeah. Danny just didn't realize when he began his assassination run, he was literally at he was drawing dead 0%.
So what ended up happening after a comedy of errors, I ended up shooting the AFG at Haley and just rolled crazy. I rolled natural 9 as a shooter. She was sitting at zero camp. Mm. I ended up killing her that way.
Did you roll high on the rapid fire, too?
Yeah, I had 4 shots.
4 shots, yeah.
Yeah, and just like...
That was on the turn following the turn where everyone was out of range, though.
Yeah, she had...
She had a chance to try and kill you.
Yes. Oh, right. So what happened was she had TK'd a Stormfall Archer. I was already in base-to-base with, I want to say, the Halberdier UA.
It was Holt.
UA.
It was Holt.
Oh, it was Holt? Mm, that's Holt. Right, because he'd walked up to shoot through the gap. So the way it was set up, it was Banshee, Holt slightly to his back right, Ossian to his right, and then a Stormfall just slightly off, a little further to the back right of him. He'd walked up the Lancer, TK'd the Stormfall up, and tried to box me in. What ended up happening is that the Stormkai couldn't walk over far enough to actually fully box me in, so Ossian just scooted his way over.
With admonition?
Yeah. Which gave me like the one turn to just roll lights out and hope I did well. So that's how my first round went.
It was... probably the most enjoyable game I've ever watched.
Yeah. Just to see the comedy that was that game.
Yep.
Just to laugh at
it. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
It was... All right, knocked her down. Feet. Out of range. Hmm. All right, next move this Athena to Storm falls up. Out of range. Mage Hunter Strike Force. In range, yes. Is that getting command?
No.
basically, like that's, and the whole time Brad was just like, "All right, Haley's dead. All right, Haley. Oh no. All right, Haley's dead."
Stormfall's out of range. I was like squawking and sniping, trying to just help.
Just trying to drift onto her to get some damage going.
Yeah, all the AoEs went the wrong direction.
Yeah,
is that hitting my own models? Is great.
Yeah, you did. You actually killed several of your own models on that turn. That's true. On your assassination run.
Yes, halberdiers that were up there.
You just rolled like the 9 to kill them.
Yeah.
It was
he sure did. Yes. He sure did.
I mean, what else? That's sort of inevitable on a turn like that.
I guess.
Of course they die.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. The turn where you're exactly out of range of your AoE, you're like, let's see where it drifts. Well, of course it goes towards my guys.
Oh, I kill
I need
him?
A 10
oh,
to kill,
great.
Though, so. One dead, two dead, three dead. Okay.
Right on top of Epic Eris, as we can expect. Well, dice minus 6. 11? Yeah. Yeah, that's what
What else could possibly happen?
That's why you need Megamins for your own blast damage.
True.
Seems like a poor reason to put them in your list. Just of the possible reasons to include the
besides they're just good.
Of which there are many. Though if he's in the list because you plan on accidentally
killing your own model, probably mistakes
like,
are made.
I generally target things that are really close to my own stuff. So
No, you know, because
danger
need,
close.
You need to charge your troops forward first and then you shoot your AoEs into their infantry.
Because it doesn't work the other way
around. Not at all.
So you gotta have the blast protection in there.
Well, it doesn't if you play fantasy, right?
Rival.
You played fantasy. Isn't that how it works? I'm debating getting into fantasy and playing Lizard Men.
Lizard Men are really cool.
Apparently that's how it works. Is like your guys go to activate. I don't know the rules of that game at all.
It's all like phases.
But whenever I see it, like they have to walk in like, you know, ye old military styled like groups and just somewhere halfway through walking, like someone trips and like drops a magic bomb and half of the unit just explodes.
That's entirely not how that works, but
Lance.
No, I'm serious.
Insert just the laugh track. Cut Crump out and insert a laugh track here.
I think it would be more enjoyable to laugh track what Crump says.
So you actually can't hear what he says.
No. After he says something, anything at all.
Insert a laugh track.
Boom, laugh track.
I just become the Big Bang Theory.
Like Big Bang Theory.
Well, what we know is that Colin will love you.
Wow.
Iced.
Do you want to do your round 2?
Does the Crump have run 1?
No, I don't.
You don't? All right.
I mean,
so.
I mean, how do we want to do this, I guess? We probably should have talked about this.
Talk about particularly good games.
Yeah, like interesting
games. I thought we
would
just kind of gloss over the really bad ones and go into like particularly cool featurettes, vignettes of particular matches.
The games that were particularly interesting.
I like it. Yeah. I like it.
Actually, I want to talk a little bit more about my game with Colin. So it was Epic Morvana versus Epic Asphyxius, and the first scenario was supply and demand. It's the 12-inch circle in the center with the two zone or the two objectives sitting kitty corner.
It's supply and demand.
You cannot dominate the zone unless so. Yeah,
supply and demand.
So we both sort of squared off centrally deployed. His Morvana list is a little bit unorthodox based on what's currently conventional wisdom. He's running Blood Trackers without Nuala, the Skinwalkers, and the Blood Pack. With the battle group, just Stalker Gorax, and the Witch Doc Croc.
I didn't know he didn't have Nuala in that list.
Nope, because he's got it in his Kruger list. Yeah. So with one unit of Shifting Stones and the unit attachment, I don't think I'm missing anything.
Well, it'll be up on Matty K's side in those also.
And then my WTC Asphyxius list. So what I'm hoping to accomplish is continuous pressure with the Bile Thralls to keep attrition swinging in my favor despite through the feat. So my objective is get a good purge, he feats, get another good purge, power through, and then my feat somewhere near the end to really swing things in my
favor.
Theory
seems solid.
And it mostly played out that way. I got the Blood Trackers sort of shifted dramatically over to one side. I'm pretty sure I was playing first, so I got to move up, and then he shifted his Blood Trackers so that they were in purge range, like a large number of them, but he had zombified them, so I couldn't use them as my targeting point. So I think I ended up taking a Skinwalker for that purpose, just moving my Arc Node up sort of behind a wall, towed to the zone. Puppet Strings Asphyxius so that I can boost hit, boost damage.
What's the power on X Grenade again?
13, so it's dice minus 3.
I always think it's 11.
Terrible.
I always think it's 11 for some reason. No, yeah.
So I need an 11 with the Puppet Strings.
Yeah, I always think it's fine and like maybe fair.
Then you actually use it.
That I never think.
and my favorite part about the Puppet Strings roll is when it comes down like 6-3-1, he's like, yes! I'm not, and then I pick up the 3 and the 1 and it comes down like 4-5, and he's like, ah. Sadness. Mm-hmm. Is it delightful? So I got a pretty significant purge that turn. I think I accounted for 8 Blood Trackers.
Someone came over and told me that you got a 12 model purge.
8 Blood Trackers.
I heard 11.
8 Blood Trackers went down. 2 of them toughed but were corroded. Killed a tree. Reduced a Blood Pack to 1 and reduced another Blood Pack to 4. And all the corrosion stayed.
With one
blood
purge?
Put
6 damage on a Stalker, too, I thought. Somebody told
me. Yes, and I put 6 damage on a Stalker. It was a good purge.
What? Pretty good purge, I would say.
Yeah.
It's rock solid. That's what happens when you've got a 19-inch threat range. It turns out you can get a Bile Thrall in pretty much the perfect spot.
No, I mean just, like, the damage rules.
Yeah,
not
I heard.
Not that extreme.
Killing a tree is a 9.
Yeah, the tree takes some work.
Yeah, this is Keith. A 9 is average.
Oh, right.
You're 50% rolling.
Killing the blood pack, I think, is 10s.
Yes, 10s per.
So, takes some doing. Yeah. But, I mean, I rolled a 9 on the tree and one of the blood pack.
6 damage on the Stalker is an 11, is that right?
Yeah, some of the dice rolls.
They weren't that good.
I'm pretty sure over the course of the videos that come out from recruits, Colin will be accused of hot dice far more than
I. Yeah, it's because he has double the rolls as anyone else.
No, for Kruger as well.
Oh, okay.
His game versus Billy was rough to watch.
So,
spoiler alert.
Just get a Rix with 1 box.
Part one of the plan complete. I got up early. Like, the Blood Trackers basically did not get to participate in the early part of the game. But he plays them. He plays his units the same way I do, where there's one, like, wee in the rear with the gear standing next to the Witch Doctor. I'm just like, I can't get there. So I basically left the one other Blood Tracker alone at that point. I cleaned up the one remaining that was forward, and I left the rear one because I had to. So my goal at that point is just do as much damage as quickly as possible to force the feat now. And hopefully, if I can do it right, overkill enough that
I've actually already made progress, even when he does get defeat. And so I was able to RFP that one Skinwalker with the Excarnate. I think I eventually also RFP'd a tree with Excarnate and a Black Clad.
Oh, man, Excarnating trees is double good then.
Quite good, yes, indeed. Because they're going to be living, so you get the RFP.
They weren't stealth.
They are, but you can just get an
Arc Node. Oh, you're right.
You can just have the Arc Node run close enough.
Sure.
Actually, the tree, I think, got RFP'd from something else. Anyway, and eventually Tartarus killed a Blood Pack that way as well. So I made some permanent progress, as well as by the time he did pop his feet, 17 or 18 models were dead. So there was any feet for 13 or 14.
Yeah, he obviously can't bring all of them back. Yeah,
he wasn't quite at full health. I think he feeded for 11 or 12. So I had made some progress, but all the Blood Draggers came back. The Blood Pack pretty much back to full strength, and he'd smashed in. My Bane Thralls were playing pretty far back because I hadn't really... There wasn't anything in particular I needed to commit them to because it's the one zone, so there wasn't like an extreme pressure that... There wasn't anywhere they needed to be, and the Blood Witches with their mini feet were very effective in that matchup as compared to how they normally operate in Circle, which is pop their mini feet and then all die anyway. He wasn't able to kill more than like 2-3 of them when they were mini feeded, so I was able to use them effectively for the scenario pressure. Well, the Bane Knights worked on killing the Blood Pack. So the Bane Knights were able to reduce the Blood Pack down to one member, while the Bile Thralls reduced the Blood Trackers down to one member.
Do Blood Witches RFP too?
They have the ability. Yeah, I wasn't able to get any of those to go off.
Okay,
is that
he protected
when you...
himself from those? Because after the Blood Trackers all got killed, he then zombified the Skinwalkers, which were engaging the Blood Trackers. So then I can't RFP them anymore.
That's smart.
That's how I got one of the trees, is with a Blood Witch. Poofed it into a cloud.
Right.
That's the way you can. Does the blood explosion, not the like
blood
damage
burst.
One? Yeah. Right, the one that turns them into a cloud RFPs, does the other one?
No.
Okay.
So I was defaulting to Blood Burst,
sure,
instead of Death Strikes. So after the feat...
The tree has so much blood in it.
After the feat, the Assault and Battery from the Blood Pack reduced me to like 2 Bane Knights. The Bane Thralls were still pretty much at full strength and were jammed up with the feated back Skinwalkers. But between Cankerworm and the Withershadow Combine, I was able to help clear up the Bane Thralls so they could at least start pushing in and killing some Shifting Stones. The turn after he feated, the turn before he feated, I was able to clear the zone and score a point. My plan to destroy his objective didn't pan out because he ended up teleporting it with his Shifting Stones behind a forest early in the game.
You shouldn't be able to do that.
It's frustrating.
I disagree.
So anyway, back and forth. It got to the point where I had cleared all the Skinwalkers, re-cleared the Blood Pack. And to do that, and I'd killed both beasts. I feated to accomplish that and clear the zone for the second time. And what I did, the mistake I made there was we were even on points. We were even on points, and I left Asphyxius in the zone after I feated. I teleported him back to toe in the zone instead of just getting him way out of dodge, because he'd come in to kill a couple Skinwalkers to make sure that the feat cleared everything. I was able to blind the Stalker, so easily destroyed the Stalker. The Gorax is low enough defense that he dies pretty much automatically. The Blood Pack, no problem. I needed a couple eights to hit a couple of the reanimated Blood Trackers, but we got them as well. So I was able to clear the zone and dominate for 2 to get me up by 2 points, which I didn't need. I just needed to be up so that even if he scored back, we would be even. But then I had like Cankerworm and my Arcanid towing the zone and a solo and a fair number of models from units. So I would win by points in the zone, because with the beast that he doesn't have anything of a substantial value to put in the zone. But with Asphyxius towed in, I was up by 2 and in position to win, but I was also still in position for Morvana to get the Sunder Spirits at me, as well as a few of the Blood Trackers that had switched their prey to the Bane Thralls.
were able to throw spears. And so at that point, they need nines to hit and dice minus nine, but with Scales of Fate. With Scales of Fate, that's not at all unlikely. So he was able to, with a little bit of fortunate dice, which Morvana facilitates, kill Asphyxius that turn. But it was still a really good game. I got a lot of good information out of it. And I think Morvana's a little stronger in that matchup than I'd originally given her credit for. I think she's a little stronger in every matchup than she might be given credit for.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Would you say that she's unfair?
I don't know that I would go that
patently.
Far.
If you had asked him
immediately
as Colin was rolling, like re-rolling his damage rolls on Asphyxius, I imagine at that point in time he might have been like, "This is bull."
No, I have enough foresight. I know.
Because he comes back around. See,
the thing is, he wouldn't have answered immediately.
That's true.
He would have just been quiet. I think
that's true.
He would have just been quiet. And then after, like, later on, he would have been like, no, it's fine.
I ain't no snitch.
I hate it, personally. But, yeah, that does happen. I mean, you can't give her... It's stupid because you can't give her any...
Like, if you give her an inch, she can take a mile.
Right.
Like any advantage that you give her, she can abuse it, basically.
Yeah.
And it does really hit home how badly you have to abuse her to end up even like only moderately behind in attrition after that feat comes down.
Yeah.
Like Bile Thrall purges like that against most armies is completely unrecoverable.
Yeah. Good game, sir.
It's like I just knocked out a unit, killed two models that were worth over a point each.
Yep.
Nobody comes back from that.
I just cast a spell and got up 10 points.
Right.
Right? And she's like, meh.
She's like, oh, that's inconvenient.
That's a cute trick. It's a cute trick.
Let me show you my trick now.
Yeah.
See, it shows up well.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God. Sounds like a good game, though.
It was
recorded, so...
Yeah, that was by far and away my best game of the weekend.
Hopefully y'all will be able to watch it.
Y'all.
And spot all of the mistakes and cheats that happened on both sides and then call us out on it.
Yeah, good time all around.
Yeah. Those people can suck it.
But yeah, Colin is a delightful opponent because he has an Australian accent.
Indeed.
Yep. So I don't have much to say. My first round was pretty straightforward. I played against Sam Grubb of Infamy. And he played...
Fish slapping in for
me. Yes.
400.
Fish slapping in for me.
He has 700%.
And he played Ron, and I played Doomshaper. And the scenario was Surprise and Demand. And he, I think, just miscalculated the threat on Mulg and left me a straight line to Ron on turn two or three. And so I got... And Ron, you know, was camping to Polarity Field, was elsewhere. So I just had a straight shot from Mulg to... I just had a straight shot from Mulg to Ron with Wild Aggression and Doomshaper's Feet and everything like that. I mean, he's super dead.
There's just a corridor where it's just like, in bowling for Ron.
Yeah, pretty much. So there was he was between the objective and a Phoenix, but there was like an inch gap so I had clear line of sight. And then I even had my Earthborn, who he TK'd and turned around and everything like that. I just had my Earthborn trample to the Phoenix and it ended up killing it anyway, so that Mulk could just stand on top of the Phoenix rubble and get his fist in. He didn't even end up spending any focus. He was just like, charge, club, do a bunch, fist, kill. It was pretty anticlimactic. But I think he just, you know, and he said after the game it was over, he was just like, yeah, I should have been watching Mulk. I was like, pretty much. Yeah,
that's the thing.
So that was my round one. That's a good battle report.
That's a good battle report. So my round two, which we're at, I actually played Crump.
Yeah.
I was playing Ossian, and he was playing Raven. I was playing Ron. He was playing Raven.
Yep.
The logic going into that matchup was he has a natural 16, effectively because of Force Barrier, so can't ignore it if anything. He's got it with you know, any buffs he's got there. So basically, the only thing I have to worry about in his list with the Invictors, with Snipe and the mini feet, and regular feet to try to just blow out my stuff before I even get over there. And I was playing for the Assassination.
Boy, was he.
Yeah. So I can skip the rest of the details.
Did you go first?
I went first.
Or did I? Right, so I took the side with the wall because I was like, Ron, F that noise, there's a wall over here.
Yeah.
Proved to be his doom, by the way. That wall.
Yeah, only four rounds of trying to get assassinated did it finally end up to be my doom.
I think
doom.
It was top of five when I finally got it to happen.
Right.
Well, it happened three times. The other two times didn't actually work. So the way it happened is I ran forward, he ran forward. He had moved Raven next to the behind the wall and Discordia next to her.
Right. So,
in my head, I'm like, you're done, right? So I run the Phoenix over. I force hammer. I pop feet. I force hammer Disco. I didn't even need to pop feet in retrospect. I force hammer Disco over Raven. She gets knocked down. Eris walks over, shoots her, drops off for Focus.
The one Focus that I was camping. Yep.
And I was like, all right, we're going to do this. again, brilliant tactical maneuver. Major and Strike Force were out of range for the most part. I think four or five had range. Forgot about Disco's imprint. Armor 18. Can't ignore it. Dice minus 8. This is a problem.
See, now if you'd have force hammered and then TK'd Disco.
Well, then,
in retrospect. Because I could have... Anyway, so that happens. And after realizing she was armor 18, I spent the 3 or 4 attacks on her. So I had to drop the plan and ended up going after killing Invictors because they were the real threat of the army to my army at the time. So killed a good number of Invictors. I want to say about half-ish.
I think it was like... I thought it was like 3.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was
it wasn't turn? It wasn't too many.
Yeah. He had Halberdiers in his list, which are off to my left flank, which I wasn't really worried about. Because they're just marching up, trying to keep him from losing on scenario.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
The scenario, by the way, was the one with the exploding things.
Yeah, ammunition.
Yeah,
ammunition.
Yeah,
so,
like, which blew my mind because they're in the other flight, and after Jan and I get done playing, like I walk up to the table, and all three objectives are still there, but like there's a Phoenix all the way across the battlefield.
We'll get to that one.
And I look at Danny. I'm like, is that your Phoenix? He's like, yeah. I'm like, man, you really got. Wait, what turn is this? He's like, it's turn 3. Like, why are all these objectives still alive?
You can kill them by like glaring at them angrily. They're armor 15.
So how that went down was Danny tried that assassination on me, and then I was like, oh, okay, well. Now there's a Phoenix sitting in front of Raven's army, and I was like, okay, I'm just gonna shoot it to death and like, you know, spray it with Disco and probably like
this time,
right? Yeah. So on my turn, I feet and just shoot Disco or like shoot his Phoenix with the majority of my stuff, like the Invictors start shredding into it, and Disco shoots and like boosts damage in it, and I leave it with some number of boxes where what's left is basically. 1 point in the arc node.
It had basically column 4 and 5 for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had one box in the arc node, and it had Cortex or Rod Arm still around.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And movement. Obviously. So, I think.
Maybe. No, it didn't end.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
but anyway.
It walked.
So, left this Phoenix at, like, something. My Hyperion didn't shoot its big gun shot at Discordia, because I was...
You took out the arc node.
No.
Hold on.
So there was 1 point in the arc node. My Hyperion was shooting its... I allocated a 3 focus, and it put all the boosted POW 12's damage rolls into it, because I wanted to save the big shot to shoot into his army, because he had a lot of Sentinels in his army, and the Phoenix was pretty much going to be out of the game. So if I managed to kill enough Sentinels, like the Hyperion will just run the table in the late game. That was my thought, at least. So the big gunshot didn't go in the Phoenix, and I decided to leave the Phoenix alive. And I'm like, all right, Modesto, how many points does that Phoenix have left in his arc node? And he says 1. I'm just like, all right, Eris is going to aim, shoot that Phoenix, point to the arc node. That was my turn, too.
Yeah, I walked up. So my turn, the left flank was basically Stormfalls.
Or the Halberdiers charged a bunch of Strike Force and killed them.
So the way I resolved that left flank was 4 Stormfalls basically starfired the majority of the Halberdiers.
Yep.
I think 8 or 9 of them.
Ooh.
And yeah.
Like, yep.
Bad news for them. in my head, I was like, okay, I'm losing the center of the map here. So I need to either go all in an assassination or somehow like finagle
I need to assassinate.
A scenario win.
Yeah. Yeah, right? Round three, or turn three. I got to go again just every time.
So what I ended up doing was there was a slight kerfuffle where I'd allocated focus to the Phoenix, but we realized like right like, immediately afterward, I moved some battle mages.
And I was like, wait, she's disrupted.
Took it back. Resolved that real quick.
Yep.
So what I did instead was actually have an Arcanist walk up, power boost, give him a focus. I had Silas Arcane Secrets. Ron charged my other... charged the Arcanists that had given the power boost.
Yeah, it's important to point out that Ron is in the far back corner of the table because he was like super afraid of the world.
Charged forward. I TK'd up... Sorry. Before that happened, Magister walks up, kills an Invictor, whip snaps up the Phoenix 3. Then Ron charges the Arcanist, teleports the Phoenix, he slams Discordia into the wall, ends up killing Discordia because I ended up doing some incidental damage to him earlier. Yep. Yeah, there's two Sentinels charged.
Him. And,
like the turn
like,
earlier.
Put it to like four boxes and then the slam was just like, gadoosh. And
like,
I was just like,
into the wall. It was like,
a Discordia just died to two Sentinels and a Force Hammer.
So, the thing I forgot about is I should have concentrated power of the Phoenix to buff up my odds. But Phoenix ends up walking around to Raven. And I was debating on the math at this point because I could have combusted, got her on fire, then bought an attack. And I was doing the math. I was like, well, I don't think I'm going to hit the natural 9 to hit her with the sword afterward. So I boosted hit with the sword, which reminded me that
sword... Yeah.
Actually has continuous effects fire on it.
Yeah, Modesto's like...
I never realized
Modesto walks up with the Phoenix, and he's like, I'm going to combust. And I was just like, are you trying to kill me? And he's just like, yes. Yeah. I'm like, would you prefer two POW 12s or a POW 17 and a POW 12? And he's what the hell are you talking about? And I'm like, the sword has continuous fire on it. He's like, no, it's crit fire. And he like grabs the card and like looks. He's like, yeah, it's crit fire. And I'm like, that's the gun. Looks down and is just like, oh... Yeah, I'll take that.
Crump taught me something about trolls last week, too, so...
I'll take the option behind door number one, sir.
So, I boost it with a sword. It is dice plus one for damage.
Yep.
Ooh.
That's what happens when you roll a three.
And
done. And then, like, your battle mage has spent their turn maybe killing, like... At the end of that turn,
killing the rest of the halberdiers and a couple of Invictus. Like,
at the end of that turn, I pretty much had like of my army left. It was a Hyperion, which was undamaged, and like probably five Invictors about, and then like Raven, Eris, and that's pretty much it. So on my turn, I just have a Raven go vortex herself and like one shot the Phoenix to finish it off because it didn't have like any damage left on it. Which ultimately ended up being
it's the cops.
My demise, because I had to kill this Phoenix, right? I can't let another Phoenix just, like, engaging with my caster.
Just more fire. You rolled fire out, right?
Fire
went out.
Right.
It's like my last hope.
Right. And so Raven kills...
Of course it went out.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course.
Raven kills this Phoenix, and then the Hyperion does some work, and I say go. And at this point, just to show you how retarded Ron is... My caster is behind a wall, which is normally okay against Ron, but to the left of said wall, there is a wreck marker that was once Discordia and also a wreck marker that was a Phoenix.
So he has like a little bunker
and to the
cover.
To the right is
Hyperion.
So there's literally no angle of attack that will not be plus four defense.
Right. Exactly.
So I'm sitting here. I think it's top of five at this point.
And I'm like at 8 hit points or something right now. Yeah.
So I'm thinking, I was like, okay, I have to kill Raven. How am I going to engineer this? Bananas, right? Just,
round two, I got to kill her.
Round three, I'm not going to make this happen. I got to kill her.
Round three, bitch has got to die.
To be fair, I began the match by saying...
If at first you don't succeed.
No, I began that match by saying, I'm calling it now, here's how the match is going to end. Raven and Ron are going to get in melee. And the turn I feeded, there was a potential for me to, like, boat Raven all the way through your army to get to Ron.
What I did was I ran a battle mage who had, at the time, the lowest defense. So, to go back a little bit. It was a Sentinel alive, one unit Stormfalls, half the battle mages, Ron, and I think an Arcanist back in the backfield in Silas.
That was the downfall, was there was one Sentinel left alive, and I was just like, my plan for the turn, on my turn three, was I got to kill that Sentinel so it doesn't kill Raven, and then I ended up not being able to kill it, and then I was just like...
That's why he was engaged in Victor.
This could be bad. Yeah. This could be very bad.
Yeah. So what ended up happening is I ran the Battle Mage into melee with Raven. So at this point, he's defense 21, if I'm doing the math correctly. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's 13 natural. I Arcane Secrets Ron. I'm like, I need to roll, I believe, a 13.
13 is what I remember. This is what I walked
over. So 11. That's what it right. was. 46 drop below. Force Hammered Battle Mage into Raven. He explodes on impact. I ended up doing like 2 or 3 damage with the collateral.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. And then Stormfalls walked up. 2 Broodholds, 2 Snipe Shots. They do like 2 or 3 more damage.
Yep, she ends up
Broodhold
being
shots.
She ends up being
did like 1 damage and 2 damage.
She ends up being at like 2 hit points or something.
And then the Sentinel, who had been sitting there laughing his ass off, finally charged her and killed her.
I remember watching your Broodhold damage rolls, and it was just like, oh, this is where it's going to end. Yeah. And you were like, this is my third turn of doing this, and you roll your dice, and it's like 1-2-2. And you're like, yep.
That's about right today. Yep. Yeah. So that's how the match ended. Ron is ridiculous. Mm. Like, he's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, Danny was like, blew his feet on nothing, and I was like, surely I'm safe. Behind my wall, and my rack marker, and Hyperion, and another rack marker. Nope.
Narp.
Got me. So. There wasn't really a way, like...
I remember I walked over just before you lit everything on fire.
And asked, I'm like, what? What scenario?
Yeah,
wait, what the hell?
What turn is this scenario? And, like, there's, like, there are juicy red infantry packed around all three objectives.
No, they
markers.
were, like, 2 inches away. You would be able to get... I could spend a Hyperion's attacks attacking that thing to clip, like, 2 models.
It looked to me like if you blew that thing up, you were killing... I mean, some of them would have been your own infantry.
Right, yeah, I was like,
clearly they have a gentleman's agreement not to light anybody on fire. And then the Stormfall archers lit an entire unit of halberdiers on fire. And I was just like, well, I don't know what's going on.
I'm pretty sure neither of us attacked them because at some points there were a lot of retribution models around them, but we couldn't figure out whose were who.
Yeah, no, that's also... I was like, who's... troops are whose? And they were like, I don't know. I think these are mine.
Joe was facing the other direction. It's probably not mine.
Well, with TK, who knows?
What it was. So I had, when I charged Ron, I had to charge Arcanist. I was still out of range. I TK myself into range to actually hit with the spell. Because I'd walked backwards during his feet turn just to avoid any hilarity
Death.
That ensued.
Oh, jeez.
So that's my round 2.
That's good. That's a good round 2. Josh and I played round 2. I don't know if you want to go over it.
I mean, it's not a super interesting game to talk about. It's mostly just positioning, and then I set up thinking about Goad and didn't think about 12-inch trample with Mulg and ended up being about an inch and a half too close to Mulg and got killed.
Trample Goad or just trample?
Just trample.
Feet trample. But
Feet rush trample. Feet rush trample. There were 2 Kyazes in the way. And I was able to basically get across the second. The second Kyazi was like right at like 10 inches or so. So I was able to basically just get over it and have my base and then be like an inch and a half away from Gorton, who was camping 0 with Spiny Growth.
I had positioned my jacks, the rock ram in the zone and the driller out, like separate from it, because I was really concerned about Mulg coming in and killing both jacks in the same turn. But because of that positioning, but I wanted the driller to be where he could get up and kill Mulg if he decided to come after the rock ram.
The things that I was worried about this game was just because of the scenario in the what did we say, ammunition run scenario being so point skewed towards the second player, and then the fact that Gorton has such an easy time clearing a zone if he needs to. I was terrified of going first, of him winning the roll to go. Choosing to go second, basically getting to choose his side of the table, which was huge for him because there was a giant forest in the middle of the table on his side that I made him deploy on, which dwarf jacks love.
For sure.
Also, him being able to kill both objectives to get a point and then have the easy, clear the zone feat to get
2 points, whenever I wanted, basically, yeah.
But, So I won that. I won that role, and then I was able to get the 2 points, you know, from killing the two objectives. And then I was also had the Earthburn and the Earthburn and Molg were doing the my new favorite tactic of armlocking each other, or rather the Earthborn or Molg was armlocking the Earthborn. I was getting a lot of work out of Refuge in that game specifically. So I had it on my bomber to start off with, and he would walk over. He cleared off the far objective and then walked back. Then I cycled it to, or then my rune bearer cast it on my pyre troll who walked up and shot one of the dwarf jacks that was standing next to, was in base to base with Thor and Orin Midwinter and Akai as the assassin. They're all immune to blast damage, but they're not immune to fire.
Yeah, I forgot that he has continuous fire in his AoE.
And all three of them burned to death.
Oops.
That was good for me. Killing Thor, I felt like, was a blowout for my list specifically.
Kai should be immune to fire.
I really thought he was.
Everyone thinks that.
No, I'm
everyone
just saying gets, he should be.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I have...
He should just run it.
I've had several people who are just like, Thor's immune to fire, right? I'm like,
Yes. Why not?
Absolutely.
Whatever specifically what did asked you before say? I yeah, shot, he did. I was like, he did. Is that guy immune to fire? And he's like, no. And I'm like,
no.
MF is going to burn. And he did. Yeah. So I felt like that was a blowout. And then, yeah, like he said, he was trying to find ways to position his jacks so that I couldn't get Molg to kill both of them in one turn, which I felt like could maybe happen if I can get him there with a damage buff.
Questionable a spiny growth in play, but...
What I thought of later, and I might have thought of if the game had gone on farther, was I should have had Doomshaper cycle Refuge to himself one turn so that he can feet, walk forward, scrub the Animi with Molg's Animus,
and walk
then
back.
Refuge back after hitting something.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That would have
mean his command range isn't much more impressive than Molg's, but...
But then he can walk 8 inches.
Right.
And I didn't need the feet for anything else. You know?
And the Refuge the other 8.
That would have been a 4-damage swing, you know, between Molg's Animus taking Spiny Growth away and then putting the Pyre Troll Animus on Molg, and I might be able to kill both of them then.
It's possible. Like, the game is really interesting because there's a, like, I am sort of stuck, like, particularly because it's one scenario zone, I'm kind of stuck waiting to do something to you until I can deal with the Genissa problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I've got to send things like Kel Balok or Eliminators and hope that they get in to get on Genissa and can take that out for me. And meanwhile, you're like, yeah, like you can't give up too much. You've got to worry about the feet. You've got to, So
my basic game plan was, and then we don't have to go too much into it, but my basic game plan was, you know, Genissa puts the wall in front of Molg and the Earthborn to basically make them immune to non-reach dwarf jacks. And then they were arm-locking each other to make it so that he couldn't push me out of the zone, push me back. And that worked decently well. And between that and then him not realizing him being scared of me killing both jacks at once, so he spread them out one turn and just left a landing space for Molg to go. And I'm like, well, there's a caster with 0 camp, and all he's got is a +2 armor buff. I can probably kill him. And my dice tried really, really hard to not make that happen. But it did end up happening on, like, the second-to-last hit. So...
Yeah. Yeah. It was just... was a boneheaded mistake. Forgot about the full... Like I said, I was worried about my jacks and worried about goad, and I wasn't thinking about feet trample at all. So, yeah.
That was both of our round twos. And that was both of your round twos.
So, Keith?
Oh, I played against Sam Grubb with Raven, and I was playing Epic Denegra. And he ended up forcing me to go first, which I was not unhappy about. With Epic Denny, I'm kind of okay whether I'm going first or second in that particular scenario.
That's kind of irrelevant to her, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was able to apply enough pressure with the Raiders, which I had to crisscross because he put the Strike Force in front of the unit that didn't have the Force Barrier. So I just, because they can run 16 inches, I just crisscrossed them on turn one. And then on turn two, I was able to get most, if not all, of the Mage Hunter Strike Force engaged and allow the Negra to start moving forward. I was not able to feed on turn two because there was still a danger of death, but then Raven feeded, and I feeded the subsequent turn. I was able to put on enough pressure that he didn't have the opportunity to both prevent his army from total destruction and get the objectives killed. So I was still able to get both objective kills instead of just the one.
Going first.
Going first. And then a feat left him only able to get Ayana and a Manticore into the zone. And at which point, Denegra was in it. So she charged and removed the Manticore and venomed and killed Ayana.
Is that game?
That was that game.
Because you can score 3 points the turn that you kill both objectives.
Four.
Or four.
I killed both objectives and dominated. That scenario is not well.
So Sam Grubb fought me first round and you second round?
Yeah.
It's a hard knock life.
That sucks.
And then got slapped with a fish.
No, that didn't happen yet. We're saving it for War Machine Weekend.
You haven't even played?
Well, all of you ditched. No, I crushed him.
Oh. You just didn't slap him with the fish?
Nah. No, that fish is adorable, though. Like, I'm like, bark it, go get something. He's just like, all right, I'm going to go get a beta fish. I'm like, no, I don't get that. They carry skin diseases that can actually, like, infect humans, and it's very bad. He's just like, oh. Like, I did not know that. And I'm like, yeah, I know stuff about fish. And then he's just like, oh.
I know stuff about fish.
I feel like that's an incredibly creepy line.
There's no something fish.
No, really, I know stuff about fish.
We need to change
his forum. Nope, we're moving on. Lance cuts us here.
We need to change his forum tag.
To I know stuff about fish.
I know stuff about fish.
Stuff about fish.
They're beautiful creatures. They're beautiful. Yeah. Especially that stuffed one.
Yeah. That is my favorite fish. I'm not gonna lie.
Awesome
I like that
looking.
Fish.
Oh, man.
You should put a picture of it online.
But no, we'll probably play again War Machine Weekend. I like that game against Sam. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, I like Sam a lot after having met him. I didn't get to hang out with him a whole lot, though.
Going to dinner with those guys, because you guys ditched me, it was actually awesome, because Barkin had an amazing story about...
I told Brad to come in and tell you we were going.
No,
you chose to stay.
I know.
That's not ditching.
Well,
I even told you that we're going.
Colin chimes in.
All right, I'm blaming Hot Girl, because he was like, we're going to go to dinner around 8. And then I sat down to play a game at like 6. And he's like, hey, we're going. I was like, God damn it, Carl. But yeah.
Awesome.
It was a good game.
I love hanging out with Carl. We got to see him this weekend. Sounds like exciting news for War Machine Weekend this year. It's everything's going really well as far as the ramp up is going. Chris had some prototypes for his trophies. They look even more ridiculous and amazing.
That's awesome. I saw Chris there, but I didn't have a chance to go.
He was playing High Command. Looked like he was having.
No,
a good
he
time.
Was playing Pathfinder too.
Pathfinder and High Command.
Didn't have a chance to go say hi because I can't remember what I was doing when I saw him, but. Yeah.
Yeah, his prototype's pretty cool. It's like the trophy's like a box, and the outside of the box is just a million gears that he's gotten to
all interconnected turn. Gears across all, like five.
Well, five of the faces.
Yeah, four or five faces on the cube.
It would be four, actually. Because one's the sign and
one's
the bottom.
One's bottom. And then they all cause each other to turn, and he's going to have one gear with one tooth that's going to go around, so it'll be like click, and the gears will all shift slightly, and then shift slightly, like a clock. Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
It's really super cool.
Yep.
And, of course, there will be LEDs. And
Yeah.
It's going to be classy.
Bling.
It's going to be classy.
The bling blings.
Yep.
Shout.
Just put the cool
Convergence bling.
Did you see his Convergence bases?
I've seen pictures of them online.
They were
sweet. And the one that John assembled.
Yes,
so,
they also looked very, very nice. So, Carl's entering into high stress mode regarding War Machine Weekend, but he's still... Oh, it's tons of fun to see Carl.
So. Absolutely.
Yep. Oh, interesting thing that happened at Recruits.
What was that?
The last day. Saturday around 11 p.m., I decided, man, Highlander sucks. No one ever wants to play in Highlander on Sundays. And I'm just like, Kim, I'm gonna throw this out there. Let me know if it sticks. I want to run a tournament tomorrow during the Highlander as well, like, side by side. She's just like, yeah.
Concurrent.
Like, yeah. Let's just do that. And I was just like, oh, that actually was a thing? Okay, I guess I'm running a tournament tomorrow. So I came back to the hotel where everyone was burying Werewolf, and I was like, yeah, I'm running a tourney. Everyone come. Unregistered tournament at a con.
And we all said no.
It happened. And you played.
You did.
I did.
We can get to that.
Yeah. Team DJ.
Team DJ. Keep going with battle reports, or are we going to...
Do we want to keep going with battle reports, or...
Screw battle reports.
If there's anything else in particular you'd like to highlight, but...
I'll highlight a couple of moments of my game
with
Dave.
A lot of games were played this weekend. I want to stick to the best, the cream of the crop.
Well, I want to give a shout-out to my round three opponent, which was Brent Simon. Just a quick shout-out, because that was a good game. I ended up surviving, like, at the end of the game, I ended up surviving, like, an 80 to... an 80% or higher, like, assassination on my caster, and was just like, well, it's going to be one of those days.
Get lucky.
I guess I'm just going to get in. Like,
get lucky.
Yeah. So, but yeah, shout out to him. He was I'd never played a game against him before, but he was a very nice opponent. And then my round four opponent was Dave Aduro from Des Moines of Necron fame. And I love playing against Dave. It's always a good time. There were a couple of good moments that game, though, where basically one of the things that I was proud of was there was this turn. Basically, the way that the game had worked out was I ran my whole army forward. He ran his whole army forward. We were playing,
Outflank.
Outflank, the two big zones.
Mm-hmm.
And I popped my feet to try and... I did the whole thing where, you know, he presented me with enough of his army in a line that I wanted to try and have the Fenblades go up to, like, get this whole front line, and then the Scattergunners run up behind them, and then just do this, like, massive feat where I just kill, like, everything.
It was Epic Madrek versus Peelage.
Yeah, Epic Madrek versus Peelage. And I only managed to kill... I killed, like, 7 or 8 models, but it wasn't that great of a feat. And then he managed to retaliate and do a decent amount of damage. But the way that the game ended up working out was we were sort of divided down the middle line of the table, where he had this, you know, because he got this really great thresher off where he got 4 Banes and I hadn't touched the Bane Knights. So there was a 14-man unit of Bane Knights running around on the left side of the table, and it just was starting to, like, run all over that zone. And then, but I had completely cleared out the right zone, and I did it first because he failed to kill the Scattergunner Standard Bearer with a couple of attacks. So I just had the Scattergunner Standard Bearer standing in his, you know, on the left zone, holding it back, where I cleared out my right zone and ended up dominating it with Madrek. Then, because Teleport is BS, with his 14-man unit and Tartarus, he was able to kill the one Standard Bearer somehow. And then have the Bane Knights run forward to just be this giant, like, wall of undead dudes between my entire remaining army and the left zone, which his caster was now in, despite him being, like, 19 inches away from it at the start of his turn. Because Teleport is BS. So we were both dominating now. And he was able to just keep, like, he had enough guys that he could just run in to my zone. So I had to go into overdrive mode and start trying to kill guys and get, like, any clear spot to get back into his zone. I still had, like, 7 burrowers or 6 burrowers left at this point. So I burrowed them and was like, I just need to keep these. I just need to stall it for one turn. I just need to stall the game for one turn, and then these burrowers can pop up, and they can just go all over this zone and be all over everywhere, and hopefully that'll be enough, and I'll be able to keep dominating on my side. But I had to kill, like, 8 Banes before I could get anything in my side into his zone. So between Scattergunner's aiming, and then the thing that I was particularly proud of was Victor Pendrake was sort of just in the middle of the table trying to be a speed bump. But he was, like, surrounded by Banes and Bloodgorgers.
Victor Pendrake. That guy sucks.
So my Scattergunners activate, and most of them aim, and some of them walk over, and they kill a bunch of Banes, because those guys are really easy to kill when you aim. And then there's 2 Bloodgorgers standing next to, like, engaging Pendrake. And I'm like, I don't know how I can possibly kill these Bloodgorgers.
Without an Orgoth sword?
And still have Pendrake available to get into the zone.
Yeah.
So I have my Bomber activate, which is about 4 inches away from Pendrake. He girded himself and walked into base-to-base with Pendrake and just started dropping bombs at his feet.
Just throwing at Pendrake. Being, no. What do I need to hit?
Like, throwing at
20.
I was actually just throwing at the Bloodgorgers.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, they were, like, an inch away. So it's like, miss, but I get your blast damage. Boost on both of them, you know, kill. And then if either of them had toughed, Gerlach was dead at that point, so I could have just gotten the direct shot on them afterwards with the rate of fire, too. Ended up killing them both with the first bomb. I thought that was pretty sweet.
Gerdit is so broken.
And then Pendrake was, like, looking around himself. Like, he's, like, at the beginning of the turn, he was surrounded by, like, 5 or 6 Banes, 2 Bloodgorgers. And he just kind of looks around at the end, and he's like, sweet! Steps into the zone and holds it off.
All right, then.
And then the next turn, the Brewers were able to pop up and sort of scatter out in a star formation.
And get scared by Asphyxius.
Yeah,
that's kind of a...
Yeah, that did happen.
Oops.
That did happen.
Just to mention the remainder of my opponents, round 3 I put against our friend Cray Kellogg from Oklahoma. Yes. No.
Jesus, Nebraska.
Nebraska, whatever. Interchangeable crappy states.
Wow.
Oklahoma.
I'm sorry, Cray. And everyone Nebraska. From Nebraska.
I don't know why I do that. That particular...
Confuse Nebraska and Oklahoma?
Yeah, they're not anywhere near one another.
Omaha,
I mean,
maybe?
They're sort of near one another.
Yes, it might be the O names.
I get St. Louis and New Orleans mixed up for some reason. Like, I have no idea why.
I have a theory. I have a theory.
Yeah, don't say it because I know where it's going.
Okay.
At any rate.
Don't leave us hanging.
I played against Cray, and he had Aurora, but Convergence at this point I don't think is quite prepared for facing off against Epic Denegra going first in Incursion.
It's because he's dumb.
No, actually, it's because the New Orleans Saints, and then whenever I think Saints, St. Louis. I don't know. I think that's actually why.
So what I said.
Sure.
Yes.
Interesting.
At least it's not Nebraska and Oklahoma.
And laugh track here.
Yeah.
Oklahoma's okay.
Literally.
And then last round was Chetgar, one of our locals.
We had a lot of local on local.
We had more, Kim said more people came from with our group than they had locals here. So.
Yeah, we read a lot.
That's how we roll.
Yeah. 30 deep.
So my third round was recorded on Matty K. One of the defining changes, it was Austin versus Epic Morvana. Where I derped was the Stalker had been teleported up to kill the Banshee, mm-hmm. and I forgot he had warped for strength and not for prowl. So I had moved up within 5 to shoot him, thinking that he had stealth, realizing I could have repositioned around to get more use of Austin's feet onto the left side of the board mm-hmm. than I'd been doing.
Or so, even aimed.
I mean, I ended up getting around it because I ended up killing the Stalker anyway, but that would have changed the course of the game from that point on because she basically started out-attritioning me and it ground out.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, so and we can watch it on the website too if you need to. So.
My fourth round was really short. I basically lost. this is a theme now. Bottom of 1.
Wow.
Yeah. It was Epic Veil double blit onto Ossian.
I've done that.
I moved 5 inches out of my deployment zone.
Gen Con was sweet.
Harrier had run up. He had moved up, hit it, feeded, oblit dies. I was like, huh. That's how that works.
Okay.
You should definitely be familiar with that before next month because there are like 47.
That's why he did it this time.
I worked out of my system.
He was planning ahead.
Literally 5 inches out of my deployment zone.
He's in it for the long run.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, she gets +2.
Yeah.
And then, like, Harriers run forever. They're speed 7. Yeah.
She just has to be able to... And she's a gunfighter. So
she can charge.
Charge and wing the Oculus forward. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
That's the thing.
My round 3 opponent, I think it's Michael, I think Bressers, I can't remember for sure.
Yep.
Bressers, yeah. Played Lich 3.
He actually, I think, is from Oklahoma.
Sure. I don't know, I didn't ask him. very gracious opponent, very fun to play. He jammed me pretty hard. I ended up out-attritioning him pretty well with Damiano, but I just need more practice. This is the round I decided I need a lot more practice with that list with time turns because I got some of my order of activations mixed up and got scenario pieces jammed behind my gun line pieces because of the idiotic order in which I moved them. And he won on scenario before I could get stuff up to the flags.
Aw.
You made that mention. You mentioned that you need more practice with time turns. Or you mentioned something about time turns too on Thursday when you were doing that crappy mayhem.
Yeah, because I... It was,
whoa,
yeah.
Crappy.
Yeah.
Crump's Crappy Mayhem Tournament.
There you
Crump's
go.
Crump's Crappy Mayhem Tournament.
That's better.
Yeah.
And maybe
don't blame Mayhem.
Maybe that's something that we should do more is getting that. You should practice with hardcore time.
No, you're probably right.
It's like weight training. Like, seriously. Like, then you take the weights off and you go back to 10 minutes. You're like, oh, man, I just got so much time.
Yeah, that's probably
like a sandwich.
There needs to be some things that are like virtually muscle memory. Like, boom howlers and gun mages space like this when they're mixed deployment and you go like this. Like that's just what I need to practice on because that like having that skill in this particular game would have won me the game as opposed to, you know, losing the game. And then in round 4 I got to play against Mike Perrier and he was going to drop. I the fact that he was facing me in round four indicates that he was having a rough day.
So, oh, no. It's because Alex Grant knocked him out.
Yeah, Alex Grant knocked him out.
Because guy's a pro from
Alex
Armada.
Grant moved on to tougher opponents after that. So that's
Mike threatened to crucify him.
He did.
Alex walked over to me in the middle of that game of Werewolfhood. We was just like, we need to crucify this guy. Like, take him out to the parking lot.
He talks
string
about
him up.
Eerily, with eerie amounts of specificity.
Yep.
Yeah, Alex walked over to me after Mike was saying all this, and it's just like, should I be concerned?
His
just
knowledge like, on the subject is a little weird. Frankly alarming.
I particularly...
Get some nails.
I particularly enjoyed Mike just being like, Alex, I'm not saying that you need to worry, but there's a good chance you're going to die tonight.
Not that you should worry about that.
Yeah.
It just is a problem. Yeah.
But yeah, so I got to play Mike. Mike was going to drop and forgot to drop before the last round. So
yeah, because he was going to drop and play me.
Yeah, so he got paired against me and decided to play me. So I'm glad. I have not, up until this game, ever gotten a chance to play with Mike, and I love that guy. So it was good. He played Ifiora, who is my nightmare Merc matchup out of Menoth. I hate her with a passion. But happily, he's never played against Gorton before, and I managed to get a feat assassination while literally the rest of my army was on fire. So... So,
and you actually know how to use the word literally. So.
Yeah. Well, in Ifiora's case, you know that's the case. Yeah,
that happens.
So now, yeah.
But when you're immune to blast damage,
now Mike and I don't know. I also am not 100% sure how you know committed Mike was to the game. But at least now he's played against Gorton once. So if he has to play against it at the WTC,
no, Mike actually really wanted to play that game against you because Mike is very good at the game.
Yes,
but his number one weakness is if it's something new, like he has to visually get like see it play out on the table, otherwise it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's what we talked about.
Yeah, but he's like a learning computer, and like now that he's seen it happen, like he'll never let it happen again.
I will never ever be able to drag assassinate Ifiora out of my
against
game.
Mike.
Yeah, not ever again.
Need to get him some like high level dojo practice. Get Nigel or somebody.
Oh yeah, someone that can really pull off some janky and just kill you without
in the dojo.
Yeah,
in the dojo to get him tuned up for dojo games. Okay. That's his problem. Is he plays too many actual games? he doesn't have enough practice at imaginary games.
You're just not. His problem is that he plays too much War Machine. His problem with War Machine is he spends too much time.
Shouldn't we hook him up with Casey at that point then?
No one can beat Casey.
Yeah. Oh if you can beat Casey in the dojo, that's where you're proving yourself.
So that's all the games for Saturday.
Right.
Saturday night we played some amazing games of Werewolf.
There's a lot of Werewolf.
As we usually do.
Clifton Klein, the one of the master Werewolf storytellers, has his own. He's crafted his own tokens for Werewolf now. That are the way he describes them is alcohol proof because he recently had like a bunch of those nice like cardboard card sets, but a couple of them came back like bent or stained. And
with vomit on them,
right?
Or
cards that are supposed to be designed to hide what you have are not as effective if one of the werewolf cards has a giant crease in it. Like, well, he's got the creased card, so we should probably kill him. So he made these basically little like wooden. They're about the size of a medium base Litco, and they've got the rolls on them. Some cool designs on the other side.
I was actually really impressed with the Litco thing because, like, one side it's got the logo of the game, and then the back side it says your roll, but the back side is, like, very dark brown, gray, like, blackish. Like,
it looked like he cut it and then stained it.
Right, and it's nice because you can barely see your roll, but, like, if you hold it close to your head, like, face, you can read it. So, like, in the event someone in their drunken state drops their roll on the floor... Like, everyone doesn't instantaneously know what that person is.
Right.
So, which didn't happen somehow, but...
Hmm.
It was... I thought... Whereas, like, if you drop a card, it's just like, restart the game. Whoops.
There's a couple of times I inadvertently looked over at Danny's chit, and I couldn't read it, so... Yeah.
Accidentally looked over at me.
I mean...
Accidentally saw my chip.
Was not really looking at your chip.
It just happened to be my lap.
Yeah, it was down near your...
Yeah.
Near your fly.
Yeah. Keith is bleeding because he's not involved.
That's been episode 100. On that homoerotic note.
We are actually at an hour and 5 minutes.
Yep. We're not going to talk about Team DJ?
All right. Man.
Team DJ!
So that event that I was talking about earlier before we talked about other rounds.
The Crump Corps.
Right. Crump Corps. I wanted to call it a Crump Corps, and then everyone booed. And so Kim ended up calling it Crump's Awesome 35-point Tournament.
We called it Crump's Crappy 35-point tournament.
Real original.
I know.
But
so
with that, I was short on players because apparently everyone was hungover from... Like, not just the people we were with, so like, everyone. Because, like, the hard, or, like, the Mangled, or whatever it was, Highlander was supposed to start at, like, 9. And no one was there at 9 o'clock, except for the people who were playing in Masters. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me posit a question. What is there to do at night in Kansas City?
Yeah, the liquor stores in the bar, or the liquor stores close at like 10.
No. We found one that was open to 1:30. That's why we had liquor night. We came in.
I mean, you can't go out of doors because it's dangerous. So you have to stay inside, and then there's nothing to do but get shitty face.
Well.
I think that's a lot of cities in the US, to be fair.
But it's a bunch of nerds.
True.
Right.
And Danny.
Carry on. So many, many people were hungover, so there were a smaller player base than normal.
Right. So I was trying to convince the people who had played Werewolf, i.e. Josh and Danny and Colin and everyone, that they should play. And Danny and Josh are like, all right, we will play, but only if we can play together. I was just like... This is what it feels like to be John Damaris right now. I immediately was like, this is what I have done. And so I turned it around and I was like, sure, you can. But I'm okay with it as the TO. However, every round you have to ask your opponent if it's okay. Because like half the people in the tournament were people we were playing Werewolf with, so would not care. Like per year, obviously wouldn't care. Clifton Klein doesn't care. But then there were like a few people who weren't. So I didn't want them to get tilted when there were two guys like talking about how they should play the game together, like while playing a game in a tournament. So I was like, I'm fine with it. Just tell your opponents. Also, most awkward tournament ever because I allowed proxies because Josh didn't have a driller and he couldn't figure out
a second driller.
And he's just like, Crump, can I play a point up? I'm like, okay, what? He's like, I don't have the second driller. I was like,
drop Reinhold.
I was like,
from your Durgan Madhammer list. What? Don't think so.
I'm like, all right, fine. That Rock Hammer looks a lot like a driller.
Sure.
Why not? Just tell your opponent that it's a driller before you start the game.
Oh, my God.
And then Colin turns his list into me and like goes to deploy round one and is just like, crap, I don't have my attendant priest. And I'm like, it's fine. Like, there's 10 Menoth players here. Just go ask one. And they're just like, can I borrow your... Nope. Like, just no one had one. And I'm like, are you playing a Hierophant in your list? Nope. Right. Proxy it with a Hierophant. And he's just like, okay, I don't have my Hierophant. Borrow one from per year. Because that could be a legitimate, like, if Colin didn't say anything and he just used a Hierophant, like, no one would notice except for, like, Menoth players.
Yeah.
Because no one's ever
seen. Not a 10-priest. Oh, he's slightly different dress on.
Yeah, right?
Exactly.
He holds his staff slightly to the left instead of straight up. Right. But no, it was a legit tournament. And I thought there was going to be enough time to run.
You say it was a legit tournament after explaining for 5 minutes about how you allowed proxies and one player had two teams.
It was a loose meaning of legit.
Which, by the way, the two-headed giant format of play, not like two individual armies, but two players playing one army, should 100% be.
I might try running those.
Event.
A format.
It was actually a lot of fun.
It was super fun.
So the way it worked is that we were playing mercenaries.
Yep.
Josh's mercenaries. I made a Mad Hammer list. By the way, I've never played Mad Hammer before. I have no idea how I should construct this list.
You should probably have Reinhold in it.
Never mind the whole thing.
Apparently.
So we whipped one up. It was like Nis and Kiazi and two drillers, Mad Hammer, some other stuff.
Yeah.
It was me like doing stuff and like kind of confirming with Josh. I was like, hey, does this sound right? You're like, no, it doesn't sound right at all.
That actually, I'm getting a brain flash right now because the last weekend, the weekend before this last, the Minnesota guys came up to visit us. I'm not sure we ever talked about it.
No, we didn't. We were just going to let it.
But like Nigel and Ted and Jackie and
Caleb
were all, and was there anyone else?
No, there were four of them.
Yeah, like they all came up to just like spend a weekend with us and like hang out and play some games and stuff. And I remember because I was playing a game against Ted. And Nigel, at the beginning of the game, walks over, and we're in John's basement, so there's just, like, plastic and Litcos and, like, things that he's been cutting with his laser, like, all over the place. So he basically just grabbed three, like, small base tokens, and he walked over at the beginning of the game with Ted, and he puts the three tokens down, and he's like, all right, Ted, here's your three Kibitz chips. You can turn these chips one in at a time throughout the course of the game, and I will give you a free kibitz. And then, like on Ted's turn two, he's like looking at the board, and he's like about to move his models and do something that was like clearly like not
certain
going to win
death.
Him. Yeah, not going to win him the game or whatever. And Nigel just goes, hold on, I'm spending this chip for you right now.
You don't
want to do that.
He's like, cost double. Kibitz, like, because he has to enter.
Maybe during this tournament, you should have, like, maybe it could be, like, a learning tournament for newer players, and you could have, like, a newer player.
Kibitz token?
A newer player and an experienced player, and then the experienced player could have their Kibitz chips.
That actually works out perfectly, because all of us don't like to actually play War Machine. We just watch. So we'll just be watching these atrocious games, and you're like, sitting there on the sidelines, like, this is going to be bad. Don't touch that model. Don't move that. Don't, like, thinking it in your head. And then they're, like, not spending the token. You're like, oh, God damn it, give me that token.
I can just see a scenario, like, when a game's getting close towards the end, one player's like, I'm going to spend my Kibitz token. Keith, what do I do? I'd be like, go here, do this. And then their opponent's like, oh, God, it's getting disaster. Spend a Kibitz token.
Like the
chat, help me.
Sorry, you're screwed.
It's too late. If you'd had spun a chip 2 turns ago, I could have helped you.
It's my last turn. That would be fun, actually.
So what was born out of this, though, is as I was writing our names down, I looked at it, and I realized the beauty of this moment, that our team name should be DJ, because our initials are Danny and Josh.
Yep. Team DJ.
So we are now Team DJ for all of eternity.
Worldwide, Team DJ.
Yeah.
I like it because it's
prestige.
Like...
Prestige.
Worldwide. It's like one of those couples' names, like Brangelina, except for these two.
Yeah.
Wait, that's the name of their son.
That's the name of their... No, it's Colin.
DJ-lina.
It's Colin. He already has a
name.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
No,
your
but...
son has a name, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That tournament was fun. I think I want to try to run under-the-table tournaments at cons and just see how many of the cons I can do it. I'm going to try Temple Con. I'm just going to go to all the cons this year and just try to slide them underneath Hacksaw.
It's like a money laundering deal. Where
yeah.
Like, under the table, you go, this is happening, right?
Yeah. But the entry fee for how like the prize support worked was...
It's like you sign up for this tournament in the back alley.
Yeah, pretty much. The prizes, everyone paid for $5 per entry, and there weren't really prizes, and the only store that was there was Carl, and I'm just like, Carl's got a million terrible models that, like, you know when you go into a store and there's models that never move on the shelves, ever?
Mm-hmm. Dan and Blythe and Bull.
Like, Dan and Blythe and Bull, Sluggers,
High Shield Gun
Ogre and Assault Corps, Sam McCorn and
Skinners.
The Devil Dogs, Bloody Bradigan, Scum... Yeah, Scanners. That was my prize support. I just took all the entry fee, walked over to Carl, and was like, Carl, I want you to build the prize support. Here's the money. And he's just like, deal. And I'll just sell you all the stuff at half retail. So, like, I actually got, like, $200-something dollars worth of prize support.
Yeah.
But
it's all in models nobody wants.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, yeah. I'm like,
congratulations, here's your garbage models.
Like,
and Bull.
The point of
the corn and the devil dog. Yeah.
Infernal contraption. Yeah. These are just some of the amazing prizes you can win in Crump's Crappy 35 point tournament.
I think we should start calling it Crump's Legit Tournament. And that was with heavily air quotes.
Yeah. The point of the tournament was just everyone on Sunday was like,
a lot of people didn't want to play in Highlander, and they were just going to play pickup games, and I figured I'd just organize that so people would just play.
Yeah, it was fun.
There's an interesting sort of trend that I've noticed, in that people often have more fun playing just like the event can be as standard as possible. It's not so much a variation in format that keeps the game fun and exciting. It's a variation in your opponents. So like when we travel, we want to experience the game with new people. At least me personally, I don't want to be just playing some weird ass format.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to navigate a goofy format at the same time as I'm just trying to... More what I want to do is meet new people and see different plays.
And you want to play the game that you know and the game that you love.
Right.
I hope Pereer makes good use of those devil dogs. Because he got first. So, actually, the tournament became even more legitimate.
The devil dogs were the Sterling.
The
Sterling
became
prize.
More legitimate when it was a 16-player tournament, so it should just go to 4 rounds, and then you have an undefeated, and boom, 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 first, second, third, whatever.
Naturally.
However, they told me I had until 1 o'clock to run the tournament, and halfway through my tournament, that turned to everybody has to be out of this building by 1 o'clock. So, didn't get to play the last round. I just had the two individuals high roll for first place. Pereer ended up winning.
What a legit tournament.
I feel like the L of legit should be backwards and like slightly
it's like
crooked.
Halfway
to J. So let's go over Crump's legit tournament.
Look,
just,
wait.
Let's just go over this real quick. So this legit tournament has proxies. Has two players as one player.
I wasn't. When they proposed that, I was just like, this is what it felt like to be John. I'm not going to let this happen. I'm going to turn it around, and I'm just going to let him do it.
He would troll us, except we trolled him back.
I was like, what's amazing is that he was like, I'm just going to turn around and go with it, and then things will be great. And then the very next question
great.
I had was, can I play a point over?
Up the ante now.
Wow. And my response was, just cut Reinhold.
Right, which is madness.
You almost out-crumped Crump.
I tried.
Madness.
Yes. So the list.
So I'm sorry.
Proxies.
Anyway, proxies. Two players is one player.
Right. That's which may have birthed a new format.
Toilet bowl prize support.
No toilet bowl. My butt. Mike Pereer won. Walked up, saw all the individual options, and then there was the box of devil dogs and the blisters, and he's like, "Wait, this is one option?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's just like, oh, "Sweet, I'm taking those." He was happy that he got a full unit of devil dogs.
Step back a second. The fourth thing is simple fact that the last round was a dice off.
Yeah,
exactly.
It was going to be ship.
It was building up.
No,
it was
going to be ship, captain, crew, but there wasn't enough time, so I just had them roll one dice.
You just need to make this your standard tournament format. Like,
that's how the tournament actually
works.
Every time Crump runs one of his legit quote unquote tournaments, it always follows this same.
At the end of the tournament, it's just like a coin flip.
Yeah.
No.
And we're done.
But there was even more of a read Josh had on me. Last Thursday, I ran a tournament in Mayhem, and I was pressed for time. And so...
You're always pressed for time.
Because
you're
run tournaments.
Lazy.
No, it's because I run tournaments with time constraints. But round one was incursion, and then conveniently round two was close quarters because one of those flags had disappeared anyway. So,
if you ever play in one of Crump's,
it's probably
legit
round
tournaments.
It's probably round one incursion.
It will always be. It's not probably. He's not going to change this up. It will always be incursion followed by close quarters,
unless they get rid of them in the packet, which they very well may do soon. And then I will never run tournaments again.
So Colin,
it's like, and then the next one could vary a little bit. It might be like. But it's going to be something that has two flags.
It's no. It's almost always going to be the two zone outflank because then he can just be like throw two zones on tables and not.
Well, that's
have
the same.
He can
as
do
like,
two zones,
but he can
zone
go to flag,
can
go to support
flag.
By fire.
Yeah,
because
support by fire, which
two flags, nope. And then just adds.
Oh,
the two.
Oh yeah, he's not thinking.
So
if you want to run
in Ames,
I did do that in Ames actually. No, I didn't clap through.
You didn't remember that? That was the last round. I just was like, what scenario? I'll just grab these objectives. Done. But today I actually switched it up to outflank.
So if you want to run your own Crump's legit tournaments
I'll
at your
rules.
Own local stores, you can look for the rules, the official rules, in our show notes.
Yep.
You're welcome, Colin.
One player. I think we should make two-headed giant a thing in this game.
Yes.
It's fun.
We can just play one.
It's brilliant.
One list together. Not
one list together, yeah.
Right, yeah.
We also considered alternating, like, there's one list each, and one of us
actually
has to play the list.
Round one, round one you played, and then you went to the bathroom round two, and so, like, Josh was deploying and stuff, and I was like, wait, are you actually playing this round?
Well, that's what was going to happen third round, but then, you know, we got cut off.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Time was actually...
Somebody was like, man, you got to be out of here by one.
And it was like 12, so we're like...
And we were like, but we paid for this tournament. And you were just like, no.
You got a day...
No refunds.
No.
No refunds for Crumb's Legit Tournament. All sales are final.
Whoa. You got a Dan and Blythe and Bull.
I did get a Dan and... Thanks.
$5 Dan and Blythe.
Dan and Blythe and Bull. Danny actually paid our entry fee.
I paid for our Dan
and
Blythe. Yeah, it's our Dan and Blythe. Yes. I'm actually going
to... his is yours.
Dave, he's passed out. We're going to get Dave to convert Dan and Blythe and Bull to be you and me.
Oh, my God. Who gets to be Bull?
Which one do you want to be?
We'll figure it out.
Okay. All right.
Showcase it later.
Yeah, absolutely. Forums. Which of us, Danny or I, should be Dan and Blythe, and which should be Bull? Let us know.
All right, I just want to say, we're going to wrap up here. I want to say thank you again to all the sponsors for the World Team Championship fundraiser, and thank you for all supporting it. So that's War Machine Weekend, Discount Games, Inc., I See Lead People Painting, Mechanica Studio, and Muson Minis. Anything else that we are...
Thank you very much for listening. We finally made it to 100 episodes. We really appreciate you guys being with us, and we hope you appreciated this very special 100th episode.
With Danny.
Yeah, with my husband.
Thanks to the people thanks to the crew that ran recruits and made it, you know, awesome and fun for us all.
You're welcome.
And you're welcome.
Yeah, high five. Damn.
I was judging Airbox for the finals.
We'd like to thank you for listening to this episode of Muson Minis, and want to remind you to tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for more analysis and commentary from John, Keith, Chad, Crump, and the rest of the crew. For more Muson Minis, visit us on Facebook or check us out on Twitter, at Muson Minis, and don't forget, we're also at MusonMinis.com, with tons of great articles about the hobby we all love. Alright, so with that, we're going to wrap up for today. We will be back next week with the brand new season of Muson Minis. This is Keith,
Danny,
Crump,
Chad,
and Josh.
of Damian Modesto is what I would go with, actually.
Dulcet tones.
Yeah. Smooth jazz.
I do kind of pleasure. I kind of wish that my name started with a P so that we could have been Team DP. I like DJ a lot. Don't get me wrong.
Your first name is Peter.
Yeah.
So you'd be Team DP.
From now on, Team DP.
Team DP. I kind of like our team name now.
No, no, no. I do.
Like, our
I
team
do.
Name now
I
works
do.
Pretty well.
I do. Team DJ is
You
ideal.
Didn't go with Eminem?
Why would we? Oh, Modesto and Maxim, I guess?
Modesto
no,
Maxim.
See, but that's like regular Eminem. That's what we got to think of. Let's be weird. Yeah. It's not white no. or rapper no. or out of touch of reality.
Nor coated in candy.
Though I wish I was every day of my life.
What is it, Rick Honey and Vic Vinegar? No.
What?
You're asking the wrong crowd.
I have no
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh!
Their realty team is Vic Vinegar
yeah,
is
Vic
the
Vinegar
one that's
is
supposed
one
to come
them.
In and be the asshole. And then the other one is Something Honey. And he's like...
Oh, so Vinegar and Honey is so
yeah,
sad.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's pretty good. Yeah. We all laugh.
Is that the episode? Old
laugh track.
Old laugh track.
We need a laugh track.
We do need a laugh track.
For every time Crump opens his mouth.
No, instead of Crump talking, we just have laugh tracks.
Is that the episode where Mac wears, like, this really hot sweater vest, like, that's...
They
like
have blazers.
Yellow. Oh,
they
right.
They have blazers.
Right. I just remember him sweating profusely.
They bought, like, a foreclosed home. And the people are still living in it. They have, like, 30 days to vacate or whatever.
They're just hanging out.
And so they're just, like, they go over there and they're, like, telling the people to leave. And they're, like, super scared that the people whose house has been foreclosed on are going to, like, smear it on the walls or, like, do other stuff to, like, devalue the property. Even though it's just, like, super nice family. And it's and then they have a super aggressive sales approach because Dennis tells Mac he's Vic Vinegar and
right.
he has to, and so like people come in and he's just like, "Are you gonna buy this house? I'm gonna kill your girlfriend if you don't buy this house."
Welcome to episode 100.
No, we're doing that over.
Musing. And amusing.
The episode in which we sleep.
And
wee wee wee.
It doesn't matter how bad this podcast is. Lance will save us. I call Middle Spoon.
It'll be fine.
It will not be fine.
I want you to bring back beer.
I'm probably not going to do that.
Why not?
I'm going to try and hit up all of you to bring me back beer. Because I feel like if I hit up all of you, I might get one of you to do it.
It's by pure odds.
Yeah.
Right? Someone will fumble into it.
Yeah.
Playing the numbers.
Yeah.
Josh, I brought you back this beer. You're like, Bud Light.
Oh, my God.
You're like, yeah, hell? But it's Belgian
yeah,
beer.
It was from Belgium.
I had to like, search really hard.
I looked for imported beer. I know you like that.
That's fair. I would thank you. And then dump it in the drain in front of you. But I would be like, thank you, Chad.
Segways, boosh.
And it's going downhill.
It's going downhill. We got to restart. Lance can't save us anymore.
Is this the super whole bunch of jump cuts?
Yeah. Cut it so it makes sense.
Yes. Dice it up and... make some stew.
He's pulling his hair out right now. Like,
he's like, please tell me you guys did a good cut. We should have. Wait.
Gonna do it.
We should let Danny do it. He's the guest, and he's John's replacement.
All right, we can't curse. I got to mentally think about that.
No, you don't worry about it. Lance
he's
will
the, he
he's
is,
pretty good at saving.
He is literally the only one who doesn't think about it.
Literally. Welcome to episode 100 of Muse on Minis. My name is Danny. I play Protector of Menoth and Retribution Osira.
No, you fucked it up.
That was really good.
It was really professional.
That was really
it was
good.
Professional.
It was very
which is
professional.
Not how it's done.
But I wanted something more up tempo and
grandiose.
I hope Lance puts that
deserving of episode 100.
More deserving of episode 100. More. Can you give us more urban?
We just need a little bit more hip, a little bit fresher.
A little fresh, yeah. Really.
Is that a new character in that'll jive with the young folks?
Right, exactly. Yeah, John
we're
was no longer resonating with our target audience.
So we're swapping minorities.
Yes. Yes.
That's just what we're going with here.
The fat Asian.
We're expanding the demographic.
We need a new age bracket.
It's a new age. It's a new...
Rebranding.
Yes.
We needed a laugh track.
Cue laugh track.
Crump. Crump.
That's just what I'll do instead of talking from now on. I'll just.
That would actually be perfect.
Just like the guy on Harvey Birdman, just. Well, no, that's an Easter egg.
Because it was really good, actually.
All right, take two.
Wait.
So, how are we just. So
you say, like, welcome to Muse on Minis, then Keith says the catchphrase.
You say, Muse on Minis, episode 100. But you do it
however you like.
Like, that's what I said. But like, I said my name.
But you rambled on like, your name. Yeah.
But like we told you.
But like, you know.
But urban fresh.
I know what you want to do, but like, here's what I'm telling you to do.
No. Here's what we're telling you to want to do.
Oh, okay. You got to want to do it.
Also
it's not
do
enough
it,
to just do it.
Also just do it.
Yeah.
Intention.
Yeah.
Welcome to episode 100 of Muse on Minis.
Wait.
That's what we always do.
Just think to yourself, ow, dude, it burns.
Can that story be told on this podcast?
I think that's an After Dark story.
There's no profanity.
It is verging on inappropriate.
It involves bodily fluids that are neither blood nor tears.
Is it worse than the dildo story, though?
Dildo story.
Yeah, about John's wife.
Oh yeah, no, it's not worse than that.
But that's adorable
because
it involves children.
No, this is the innocence of children.
It's adorable because it involves dusty dildos.
This is a considerably larger ramp up.
Yeah, usually it's like 5 minutes of us telling Crump to shut the fuck up so we can start.
That doesn't happen.
No, he doesn't shut the fuck up.